echo from the ages.
The words God and sky were once interchangeable to many people. The sky was worshipped as the giver and withholder of rain. With the Mongols, the single word was Tengri. In China, Di. In India, the father sky. And among the Greeks, it was Zeus. They all meant sky.
That statement was taken from Will Durant's book, Our Oriental Heritage.
This is Face to the Future, a new transcribed series on this station produced in cooperation with the North American Air Defense Command. Its conductor is Del Vina, well-known broadcaster, author, lecturer, a lady of adventure as well. It's Face to the Future. And here is our hostess, Del Vina.
Welcome again to Face to the Future. If you're like me, never a day goes by in which your eyes do not look up beyond the buildings or the trees and at what we call the sky or the heavens. Throughout recorded history, and long before that, mankind looked skyward for many things. If it was clear and daylight, there was the sun. If clear and night, the moon. If it was cloudy, there might be rain and with it lightning and thunder. It gave or did things to man, and man gave it back respect and fear. Now, after the limited experience of man in flight, he is about to put more and more things into the region of the sky, seeking by experimentation to put them there with varying degrees of permanence. One of these men is the flight test engineer and space pioneer, Scott Crossfield of North American Aviation in Los Angeles. His flights of the X-15 have caused God-fearing men to write him letters of concern that he's venturing beyond where man should go. I ask him how he felt about this.
Well, Del Vina, for those who often ask me whether or not I'm getting into God's realm, I have only this to say. There's nothing in this work that I can find that violates the teachings of our forefathers for the last 2,000 years.
Tampering with the unknowns of space, the possibilities that it might not stay peaceful, but become a route for military invasion or missile tracks in the future, the thought that men might have to defend their people in the heavens, unsettles varying percentages of mankind all over the globe. This concern has primitive roots, deep roots. Today, if one were to ask in any part of the world where a deity is believed in, for an explanation of what that deity means, he will get as many different answers as there are people, but a somewhat basic agreement in his existence. Not all people believe so surely, however.
In Chicago today, Sir Julian Huxley, speaking on the 100th anniversary of Darwin, stirred some old controversial ashes of evolution. Speaking to a university audience, he said, quote, "Evolutionary man can no longer take refuge from his loneliness in the arms of a divinized father figure whom he has himself created, nor escape the responsibility of making decisions by sheltering under the umbrella of divine authority, nor absolve himself of the hard task of meeting his present problems and planning his future by relying on the will of an omniscient but inscrutable providence." Unquote.
Theology has had its attackers and critics throughout time. Lenin described religion as the opiate of the people. But many of his people chose this opiate, and some were obliterated for so failing to support his grand design. The atheist Robert Ingersoll poo-pooed religion by saying an honest God is the noblest work of man, giving to man rather than God the role of creator. Certainly we can put no face to the future which is without theology, even a challenged theology. With this period in mind, and the future too, I have two guests, one representing Protestant Christianity, one Judaism. Would you identify yourselves, please?
Yes, I'm the Right Reverend James A. Pike, Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of California, which covers the San Francisco and Central Coastal area of the state.
I am Rabbi Max Nussbaum, Minister of Temple Israel of Hollywood.
Since religious interest is on the rise in many parts of the world, particularly in America, would you account for this in the various insecurities with which we live?
There are, I believe, two reasons for it. One is the evolving American pattern by which racial units are gradually losing their identity, but the religious differentiation has become part and parcel of the American pattern, so that belonging to a church or a synagogue has become a part of social life. And secondly, and maybe even more important, is the fact that a generation which has just gone through a Second World War is now confronted with a threat of a new one from which there will be no survivors, if it ever happens, that such a generation begins to ask ultimate questions about the purpose of life, the reason for our being here, the value of life. And such questioning leads inevitably to the synagogue and the church.
We have a great many fellow travelers of Christianity now, using the communist analogy, people that aren't card-carrying members, but who are very much using these resources in their lives, and many, many more people of that type than existed a decade or two decades ago. Also, much of the religious interest does manifest itself in terms of kind of using God, like a sleeping pill or shot in the arm or tranquilizer, whatever's needed. And this isn't quite really religious.
People who are engaged in military and space activities often get mail from other people who are disturbed by them. Is there anything in religious teaching which puts a brake on the search for security and knowledge?
To Judaism, this is not a problem. Just the opposite. The more one goes in to reveal the mysteries of the universe, in our estimation, the more one discovers the most wonderful ways of divinity. To us, each new discovery of the human brain, the human mind, is a new revelation of God, and we have always believed in a continuous revelation.
People who are, quote, religious, unquote, have for centuries, perhaps even thousands of years, wanted to put the brake. We go back to Galileo and his troubles and so forth. But I regard this as quite wrong and overlooking a basic biblical teaching that man is made in the image of God and therefore shares in God's creative activity.
We are about to give the greatest emphasis in history to mathematics, physics, science, and engineering, which require varying degrees of realistic thinking and skepticism, even proving things are not so to get basic truths. Do you see any challenges to religious dogma in this?
To us, we have never seen in Judaism any possibility of any conflict between scientific discoveries and the truth of religion. As long as people know that this universe, with all its great color, beauty, mystery, is a part of a divine intelligence plan and didn't just happen by chance.
I see a real conflict between an attitude of religious obscurantism, one might call it, which thinks that we have answers to details of history and science and so forth written down once and for all in a book. I also see a real conflict from a scientism, which is different than science, which assumes that all the answers can be found through test tubes, or if they can't be found that way, then there's no truth to be known. Actually, science tells us nothing about the purposes of life or how we ought to use the things we find out. Likewise, religion can tell us nothing dogmatically and permanently about the scientific process or about the data of life. The meaning of that which science finds in terms of purpose and direction and free choice is in the realm of religion and ethics. Some years ago, some of the atomic scientists who felt kind of personally disturbed after Hiroshima issued a statement to the nation that we should use the nuclear information for positive and constructive causes and not for destructive ones. The newspapers ran that as science says. Well, this wasn't science saying anything. This is a group of men who happen to be scientists, functioning as amateur ethicists and theologians.
So as we walk steadily into our futures as individuals, most of the people of the Western world take heart that our political and military power is based on preserving the old biblical and ethical cry of peace on earth. But if you have a youngster entering kindergarten and Sunday school classes this fall, what will be the challenges of the year 2000 at his or her age of 45? Hear it from Bishop Pike and Rabbi Nussbaum.
The possibilities of good and of evil will be much intensified. Now, there's the same old problem, but the stakes will be higher.
Military power as such is like our scientific discoveries. It can be used for something very good, and it can be used for something very evil. Totalitarian states have used it for evil purposes. In our nation, if our military forces understand that in the years to come they will have to protect not only human lives, but spiritual and religious values, which alone make life worthwhile. If this is the role our military forces will play in the future, then they will be a blessing not only to the survival of the nation, but to the survival of spiritual forces.
So the nations of the Western world would take their political and military morality from the influence of theology, where we assume the defensive and would never strike a first blow. The communist world possesses the initiative and uses the upside-down tactic of the end justifying the means, falsehoods, deceit, broken agreements. There's a difference between the statement of the cynic and the tyrant, that might makes right, and our belief that right backed by might unused but available as the best chance in the world, whether it be rights of nations or rights of man.
This has been Face to the Future, a transcribed series on this station, produced in cooperation with the North American Air Defense Command and featuring Delvina with her parade of interesting guests. Be with us next time as we put our face to the future.